It is a great pleasure and honor to be giving this paper my brief history. And also, I really want to express my appreciation to Arnold and Mark and the whole team here at Trinity Western for putting on such a wonderful conference. This really is a culmination of a three-year project that has brought, I think, the CSCA to a level of engagement and involvement with a wide spectrum of persons in the academic realm, but also reaching out to students through the scholarships. The range and diversity of the program itself, as you see, is a testament really to the vibrancy of engaged Christian scholarship at all areas of science. And I think that speaks well in terms of the future of the CSCA itself. But you might wonder, if you look at the abstract, how I'm going to deliver on what I promised in that abstract in a brief 30 minutes. And the reality is I'm not. It would be better to look at my abstract in the program really as a prospectus for a series of blogs and then articles that I'm committing to write over the coming year and which in turn would turn into a book. I have most of the primary sources for the history of the CSCA right at my fingertips, and it really would be remiss on my part not to complete that in the form of a history of a very important, really chapter and episode in the faith-science dialogue in Canada, particularly and then more generally, globally. But I would like to preface my remarks or begin by going back, referring to a text from Zechariah 4:10, and I'll quote, "For who has despised the day of small things?" We're talking a bit about that. "For they shall rejoice and shall see the plummet in the hand of Zerubbabel with those seven, those eyes of the Lord, which run to and fro through the whole earth." And here, Zechariah was speaking about the rebuilding of the temple. And this notion of despising the day of small things I've often applied to the CSCA and ASA and our ventures as Christians in the world of scholarship. Zerubbabel had finished his task, but it was just really a new beginning. And he did not, rebuilding of the temple really was just a small beginning, and he was being mocked by those around him. And it is the case, I think, that Zerubbabel undertook that task in the vision and faith that God had called him to it and would indeed see that through to fruition. And it is the case that each of us has a task in our generation to fulfill, and we must do that in the confidence that God will see it through to completion and that the full purpose and meaning of what we do is in terms of God's plans and purposes. Carrying on that commentary on Zechariah, it really is Christ alone who is the Alpha, the Omega, the beginning, the end, the one who really is the foundation stone for all that will be lasting and meaningful. And it's Mike's there. And if we realize that God's Spirit is a guarantor of the success of the work we do, we shall escape the common error of measuring this importance of things by their size, as no doubt many of those that mocked it, as Zerubbabel did at the time of the rebuilding of the temple. They say that there is a saying that the seeds of the redwood trees are the smallest of the coniferous seeds, yet lead to the huge, immense trees of the redwood forests. Well, similarly, in Christ's teachings in the parables, this mustard seed, and also in the history of the church, it is small things, small seeds planted in faith that bear fruit and in the end have full meaning and purpose. Scoffers may look with contempt at the humble beginnings, but in the eyes of God, if they're beheld as fulfilling his purposes, then small and insignificant things have immense purpose and meaning. And as in the context of Zechariah, he also talks about Not by might, not by power, but my spirit shall his God's purposes be accomplished. And this is certainly, I think, the case if we now look back over a 45-year history of the CSCA. There is a concept of lived time. This there's a study, phenomenological study by Eugene Minkowski called Lived Time. Well, this reflection I'd like to share with you is really lived history. My experience with the CSCA does go back really to its very beginnings, and there's a very personal story as well. It's 50 years ago this September that I entered McMaster as an undergraduate student, and my passion was for history and science, and to really engage in a meaningful relationship with my Christian faith, with my academic study. That summer, a pastor had lent me a series of tapes by Francis Schaeffer. They were actually the basis for the book called Escape from Reason. But that was the first encounter I had with an engagement of a Christian believer and thinker with the world of contemporary modern thought. And those lectures really emboldened or empowered me to seek an integration of my faith with my academic work. But that really, to sustain that, I really needed a community. And at the time at McMaster, there was the InterVarsity group, which had quite a strong chapter, and they provided a context in which I could engage in my academic work in the sense that there was a broader group of people supporting me, and that this was something that I could do in community. Following my work at McMaster, I went to the Institute for Christian Studies and then began my graduate work in 1973, the year of the founding of the CSCA. It was my connection with the Institute for Christian Studies that then did bring me to the early founding of the CSCA. Bob van der Venen was very involved at the CSCA. With the CSCA and its founding, he was the first president. He was also very influential at the Institute for Christian Studies. So through Bob, I really was engaged with the CSCA from its early years. This brings me into a context that I just wanted to frame my further reflections on the history of the CSCA, and that has to do with a essay by George Grant called Faith and the Multiversity, which he wrote in 1977. George Grant was a very profound philosopher and thinker, and he was president at McMaster. I wasn't able to take courses with him, but I was very much influenced by his work. And in the study, the one essay, Faith and Multiversity, he does make the note, comments that different civilizations have different paradigms of knowledge, and such paradigms shape every part of the society. And this is really where he grappled with a concept of science that was really the pinnacle of Enlightenment rationalism, where empirical method and reason led to a concept of objective knowledge that really in the end had no place for purpose or meaning. And he grappled with how that scientific paradigm, which was shaping all aspects of the university curriculum, could be compatible with Christian faith. And he sought and grappled with that through his deeply own Christian experience and also his reading of Plato and his note that he drew on Simon Weil as well, but that for him, how we relate faith to science is one of the most important questions of any generation. And in his view, a proper understanding had it that faith is experience, that intelligence is enlightened by love. And that's a complex statement. Really, if you think in terms of the Gospel of John and truth and the Logos and the concept of love, this expression really got at the heart of what Grant felt was essential for a Christian to really engage meaningfully and purposefully in the academic and scientific realm, is to have that conviction that our intelligence was illuminated by love, that is, that we experienced the other as meaningful, as significant, and as given. So in some sense, our ability to have scientific knowledge was a gift that we encountered through God's gift of our reason and our experience. Reality that Grant was grappling with in the 1960s, 1970s has now radically changed, and I refer to the other context of Jordan Peterson's work and his critique of postmodernism, where it is now the whole concept of reason and rationality in the radical critiques of postmodernism has been put up where there is no longer any concept of objectivity or objective knowledge or even the possibility of truth. And this, Peterson has really critiqued quite effectively this postmodern concept in a number of lectures. And I do have a few links to YouTube's presentations that are quite helpful in that context. But context I'd like to, and this leads me to another context for my reflections, and that has to do with a study done a few years back simply called Hemorrhaging Faith. And it's a study really of how radically disaffected or the loss of faith that is occurring amongst young people and students in particular. And the study, I believe, was done in 2012, but it goes on to state that 1 in 10 students from Roman Catholic or mainline denominations retain their faith coming out of university. And also on the evangelical side, it's not quite as bad, but only 4 in 10 students from those traditions retain their faith coming out of university. And so this is a fundamental crisis, I think, that many people are concerned about. How is it that the traditions that we hold as being fundamental, our Christian belief and the various traditions we work from in that belief, why is it that it's not connecting with the rising generation, the new generation of students? And again, I think this is very pertinent ultimately to the ministry of the CSCA and why it is so important, as well as the ASA. But this study on the hemorrhaging faith identifies 4 elements that really have affected the loss of faith. And I just highlight very quickly, postmodernism being one that's brought to the fore. And here it's just stressed that postmodernism is marked by a deep suspicion of established institutions. Authority becomes something of an evil concept, and the way to resist it is by pursuing radical autonomy. So one element that's leading to this loss really of connection with students, in general to traditions of Christian faith. Another aspect that's influencing this is consumerism. Again, excessive advertising and marketing creates a sense that a mindset that really that we're here to satisfy particular needs as consumers. There's not an underlying sense of deeper commitment and obligation that might tie one to a very strong Christian tradition. Another aspect of the loss of faith has to do with the digital information age. Students today are exposed to information and ideas from all sorts of sources that before were not really even possible. This feeds into values pluralism and their confidence in the whole concept of truth, of unique claims of, say, of Christianity, as being questionable. And the one source of trusted information in this context is peers, as friends. And that seems to be where testing and finding out the truth of certain matters is still viable. The other aspect of loss of faith, particularly in students at the university, has to do with their unique circumstances under which students find themselves cut off from family, from traditions, and in situations that include experimenting with all sorts of different lifestyle alternatives and creating, again, a certain tension and loss of faith. Now, against that backdrop, postmodernism, consumerism, digital information, and then the whole unique kind of life circumstances of coming to university, there are 4 elements this study identifies as being keys to maintaining, building, and encouraging faith. And I think here where it does come into and touch on the importance of some key aspects of the CSCA's ministry. first influence for really retaining a vibrant faith in the academic university setting is a parental influence, and I need not I will elaborate on that too much, except to say I think the CSA, ASA, and other ministries to students in the university really need to reach back and engage those students in the high school setting and prepare them for what they will experience at university. Another aspect is experience of God. Many students want tangible experience of God, and that comes through a sense that if God is real, then God needs to respond to their needs. And if those needs aren't met in the way that they expect, then there's often a loss of faith encountered there. More to that. But another aspect that really retains and helps sustain faith within the university context is community. Paradoxically, in the pursuit of radical autonomy, students long for community where they feel they have a place, where they can be part of a dynamic movement rather than a stagnant institution. And this, again, I think ties into some things we're trying to do around developing local chapters. A community that really sustains faith has to include facilitating growth in their relation to Christ, helps others in times of hardship, equips them to function with their talents and skills, and also makes a difference in the community. Another key aspect is the beliefs, core beliefs, and that really has to do with really creating an environment in which intellectual inquiry is encouraged, and there's ability to ask tough questions and have honest answers that we don't know. We have a kind of dialogue like we have tonight, but just that their Christian faith does not feel threatened by science or the issue, but it does feel the need to treat the person with integrity and trust, indeed, that God, has at work in their lives. This backdrop, I guess, of the tension that is encountered in the contemporary university setting, and where the advent, really, of a very aggressive form of postmodernism, and particularly in the humanities, has been subversive of Christian faith, is also a great opportunity for us to really expand and develop the ministry of the CSCA. And the CSCA in this regard, and this is where I'll do very quick overview, and this is really where my abstract touched on, is that it is it's often a very small organization, but uniquely influential beyond its numbers. And there's a couple of key aspects to the history of the CSCA that intersect with key initiatives from the Templeton Foundation, and then also key developments within the ASA and the development of the executive and the interrelationship of the CSA with the ASA, and then also the various presidents and leaders of those organizations. Just one point, and I think I'm going to run short of time very quickly, but the original period I talk about of the CSA in its first 10 years, it was really considered just a section of the ASA. So Ontario was considered a local chapter of the ASA, and that was it. Bob Herman, key figure, came on board as executive director and really elevated the CSA, worked with Dan Osmond and Doug Morrison to create the CSA as really an organization uniquely Canadian but closely interrelated with the ASA. In fact, for over 2 years, Doug Morrison, executive director of the CSA, was also listed as the assistant executive director of the ASA. So there's a very tight interrelationship between the two. A key element going through the history of the CSA after the early period in the maturity of the CSA, the engagement with the Templeton Foundation became significant at a number of levels. Robert Herman and Dan Osmond were on the board of the Templeton Foundation when it developed their religious prizes for Templeton Foundation. And then the religious studies course program also very much was tied in with many members of the ASA who were members who received awards from the Templeton Foundation. Environment really created a setting in which the CSCA really came to maturity at a number of levels. I'll just highlight the one period down to five. That's good. is that in the period 1994 through to early 2003, a key element there was Robert Mann, a key figure, Dennis Lamoureux, others who developed a national lecture series for the CSA. For the first time, CSA had a national kind of exposure and presence, and it was through that really a lot of new members were brought into the CSA. At a meeting in 2004, here also Trinity Western, was the beginning of the Templeton Local Society's program or initiative as well. And both Trinity Western and I guess the Vancouver local chapter in Hamilton received awards, which enabled both to develop a sustained program of activity on the local level. So to wrap up, and I'm compressing far more than can be meaningfully digested in this space, just looking ahead, I think the CSCA, by its focus on the local chapters, and developing a context in which the concerns and needs of students can be addressed in a meaningful way, in an honest and open way, but also have access to key elements of, you know, the best in Christian thinking and scholarship is critical to the CSCA. And we're at a point now, as we conclude the program through the Templeton World Charity Foundation, where we need to step back and look at how can the CSCA and ASA really engage with the next generation of students and create an environment in which their faith can flourish and they can develop their talents and skills. And I can, I just close on this point in terms of some of the key elements of the CSCA where it can make a difference. And it is, and it's really aspirational or a visionary aspect of the CSCA, again, to say it's, although numerically very small, the vision is big. The vision is rooted in a confidence in God's purpose and plan that goes beyond any of our particular means or ability to deliver. But in the first place, now there are six key elements that I'll conclude with in terms of where the CSA really can reinvest and plant seeds that will indeed grow and bear fruit, is that the CSCA is proactive. It brings Christian faith to the great issues of major universities and research centers, and it brings these issues in to challenge and stretch our faith. Secondly, the CSCA nurtures Christian students and engages Christian faculty in collaborative fellowship, key element again of much of the local chapters. Thirdly, the CSCA respects the intellectual gifts of students and faculty who inhabit our universities and encourages them to develop their academic research gifts as part of their Christian vocation and scholarship. So science scholarship is a Christian vocation that needs to be encouraged and supported by all means possible. The CSCA is also relevant and takes on the big conversations of the day, and we've seen that in many of our lecture series. And the engages in those issues at the time that they are becoming prominent in the world scene. And I think also in this context, backdrop, that of the Canadian setting, the impact of Jordan Peterson's writings, at least he's existentialist and not in any way specifically Christian, but has opened up the big questions about purpose, meaning, God, and the authority of Scripture, that really is a huge opportunity for us to re-engage with the next generation and have a significant impact. Finally, or number five of the six points, the CSA listens as well as speaks. We seek to carry on respectful conversation with Christians and non-Christians alike on important and controversial topics. Again, a key element of many of the local initiatives and talks that are given on campus. And then finally, the CSA celebrates intellectual community, the common cause of faculty and students in research and scholarships. And this brings Christian into cooperation with non-Christians as well as Christian believers under a concept of a pursuit of truth and finding deepest meaning in terms of our own personal vocation, work, and our responsibility to our generation, to our environment, to our community. So these six attributes of CSA, which are aspirational but really key to the vision and the ministry going forward, really are the core element to our planning going forward. So indeed, in this context, let us not despise the day of small things, but as with the mustard seed, let us plant those seeds. Faith, water them through the community, through the convictions, through the research and scholarship, through the faith and prayers of our community, so we may indeed see these seeds bear fruit into the next generation, and that we may indeed rise up a whole new generation of leaders in the CSCA that will carry the work forward, and indeed we will see God's blessing in all we do. So that, apologies, that's a very rapid talk covering various high points, perhaps, of the CSA, but an underlying point really is that the interdependence interaction of CSA executive with ASA and various Templeton initiatives has created unique periods of influence in the CSA that have really put us at the position where we are now, that we can hold a conference like this and plan forward to really engage and develop our influence for the coming generation of students. I'll leave it at that. Thank you, I guess, if you want some questions, but it's been a great privilege to be involved with the group, and thank you for that.
Thanks very much for that, Don. That was very enlightening. I'd like to get a copy of some of the notes, if I might.
Sure. But,
I wondered if you have seen any progress on either side of the border towards bringing in something besides the exclusivity of evolution as a cause of life being taught in our school system. Do you see some of the states, I think, are trying to bring in some alternatives?
Yeah.
Do you see much movement in that area?
I can't speak from any immediate direct experience. I know that the ASA back in the late 80s, early 90s had teaching evolution in a climate of controversy, which did attempt to provide a framework to widen the discussion and keep open a variety of perspectives and not have it closed down by a kind of a narrow naturalistic view of science and origins. But I think that's still very much an open matter. I think the level of discussion and debate has shifted. There are a lot of newest insights, and I think the CSCA and ASA have remained open to encouraging that diversity of opinion and trying to resist any narrow or reductionistic views of science that would preclude a deeper understanding of our meaning and purpose of life.
Thank you very much, Don, for that once again.